The Transportation Committee will come to order. Folks, here's kind of what the agenda is going to look like for today and Thursday. Today, we're going to hear from Senator Dibble, and we're going to adopt his report from the Transit Committee. We'll hear the bill first, and we'll talk about it a little bit, but we'll adopt that. And then now that we have that here, then we can put that in the big bill. Then we're going to explain the path that we'll take, and we'll take the votes on the two big bills, or I should say the one fiscally constrained bill and the big bill, on Thursday, and we'll mark the bills up at that time. Today, what we intend on doing is hearing from Senator Dibble and the work that his transit committee did, and then we'll move to the other two bills. One of them is a bare bones bill, and the other is a large funding package. We'll walk through both of those bills. When we're done with that, we'll take testimony from the public, and we'll try to answer any questions that you have. You have to understand that Ms. Berezovsky and Ms. I'm sorry, Ms. Berezovsky and Ms. Boyd have been working basically around the clock for the past 4 or 5 days to get all this together. Most of the work is done, but we're waiting on copies for those bills. So until we get those bills here, we're going to have to talk about what's in them without you seeing them. I hate to do that, but it's kind of the way that it goes. But we'll just talk generalities. Once the bills get here, then we'll start. We do have the bare bones bill here, and we're making copies of it. Once we get going in those bills, then we'll get more detail. And then, like I said, we'll mark the bills up on Thursday, and Thursday we will have a vote to send those two bills to the Finance Committee. Now, the reason that we're sending both bills to the Finance Committee is in the event that the large funding package, which also includes all the budget items, if that does not garner a signature by the governor, we'll come back and we'll pick up the bare bones bill and we'll move forward. And with that, we'll ask Senator Dibble to come to the table and we'll talk about the work that his committee did. And folks, I think we all have a copy of the subcommittee report in front of you. It's SS 1672 SUB. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I think the committee report is the product of a great deal of effort and consideration by the committee members that serve on transit, and I thank them for all the time that they spent. In particular, I believe that the bill is responsive to what we've been hearing over the course of quite a few years, and more specifically, this session, as folks are aware, we've been in conjunction with this House Transit Subcommittee holding community hearings out in the communities around the metropolitan area in greater Minnesota. And we've had several hundred people come forward, citizens, elected officials, as well as service operators, and have been talking to us very intensively, very in-depth, sharing their personal stories and sharing their experiences as representatives and as providers about what the need, what the unmet need is, how that impacts their lives and the welfare and the livelihood of their communities, and what might be possible, what the vision is, what could happen in this state, what could happen in this region if we were to really do more and better in terms of investing in transit and really try to put ourselves on the map and keep up with other states around the country. I mean, other regions and other states around the country. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll walk mercifully, hopefully fairly quickly, through the bill and try to call out the highlights of that. Just my little reference sheet in front of me here so I don't miss anything. Article 1 just deals with base appropriations, base level appropriations in the coming biennium, that's Section 1 and Section 2 for Greater Minnesota, as well as metropolitan area transit operations. Sections 3 and 4 deal with the deficiencies that we have in the current biennium that results from the shortfall in the motor vehicle sales tax. We have a $5.8 million deficiency yet this year that we need to deal with in 07 for metropolitan transit operations and $391,000 for Greater Minnesota Transit. Article 2, probably the first item of interest, is on page 3, lines 312 and 313. That gives a sales tax exemption for North Star Commuter Rail. This is similar to the exemption that you find up in on lines 3.4 and 3.5, the sales tax exemption that the Hiawatha Light Rail Transit received. That's for rolling stock and I think some of the equipment purchased for the construction phase. Moving on to pages 3 and 4, section 3, this deals with the motor vehicle lease tax that we've had discussion with as part of Senator Bonoff's proposal. And what we're doing is taking 100% of the motor vehicle lease tax raised and dedicating that to transportation purposes. There's a five-year ramp up that's called for in kind of the first four paragraphs. And then in paragraph 5, what we propose to do is take 50%, this is when everything is fully phased in, take 50% and use that for road purposes, and 50% use that for transit purposes. Of the 50% that's coming to transit, 75% of that would go to metropolitan area transit, metro transit, and 25% would go to Greater Minnesota Transit purposes. And then moving on to pages 6 and 7, that deals with the motor vehicle sales tax, the MVEST. Again, the five-year ramp-up. We keep the split at 60-40, roads and transit, and then we do a 36-4 split between metropolitan area and Greater Minnesota. Article 3 deals with raising a sales tax in the metropolitan area. I'm sorry, that's not what that is. No, I don't know what that is exactly. That's a technical item we didn't go over last night. We don't have council's attention right now, so we'll come back to that if there are questions about that. Page 9 is where we deal with the half-cent sales tax raised in the metropolitan area. And real quickly, what we propose to do is raise half-cent sales tax in the seven-county metropolitan area, establish a joint powers between those seven counties, and that joint powers entity is then responsible for embarking on a process for purposes of spending that money for planning, for capital, and for operations. That's for both transit and roads, though the split would be 80% of those proceeds would go for transit, pedestrian, and bicycle. So 75% for transit and 5% for bike and pedestrian purposes, and 20% would be for road purposes. And there's a process set out that other public agencies and entities could apply to the Joint Powers Board for the purpose of using those funds for those purposes, for planning, for capital, and for operations of transit and roads. Additionally, we ask that, or we direct the joint powers to study all the various transit corridors that have been articulated, envisioned, a lot of excitement around the metropolitan area. A number of those studies have been brought forward by members of this committee and other members in the metropolitan area. We would ask them to study the 94 corridor in the East Metro area, as Senator Saltzman has proposed. We would propose the Rush Line Corridor be studied that serves the North and Northeast Metro area, the Red Rock Corridor, as Senator Sieben has articulated, the South and Southwest, all the way to Hastings, ultimately perhaps onto to Red Wing. The Southwest Transitway Corridor is proposed by Senator Latz, would receive some study attention. That's, of course, Southwest Metro area coming up into Minneapolis. The Interstate 494 corridor, and actually that was brought forward by Senator Larson in Bloomington, and his original intent was to look at at 494, kind of from the airport to the western suburbs. Through the discussion, the committee discussion, it was thought that we should study kind of that whole lower ring that 494 represents. The Interstate 394 corridor, not the Interstate 394 specifically, as Senator Bonhoff has proposed, would take a look at transit service out to the western suburbs. And then, of course, there's the 20% for road purposes and then the 5% for pedestrian and bike facilities. And then the grant process is described later on page 11. And then, Mr. Chair, we have Article 4, which contains a number of policy provisions that have been brought forward in various bills from members of the Transit Subcommittee and others. And let me just find my summary here, and we can go through those. We do bring forward the elected Met Council, about which we've had a lot of conversation. That was Senator Wieger's bill. I think folks are probably familiar with that concept. I think my my summary is different than my summary is different than the one I had last night, so I'll refer to my own sheet.
Mr. Chair, would you prefer comments as Senator Dibble is going or when he's complete?
I think we'll leave that up to Senator Dibble. Do you want to field questions as you take each
That's fine, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Senator Dibble, I have to say I know you know how I feel, but I just want to say again that I'm very excited about this proposal that I strongly disagree with, putting in this particular proposal the elected Met Council, and I just want to talk for a moment about why I think that's so important. I think that we have put forward a very, very aggressive plan in this and something that we are all proud of, and I think that in order to get this through, it's going to take bipartisan support greater than we've ever been able to put together, and I think that means bipartisan support in the Senate and bipartisan support in the House, and I think I would, you know, if I was a betting person, I would say there's going to be a veto and we're going to need an override, and I don't want to have anything that detracts from the positive energy around this important, important bill, and I think this is a very important bill for our future. And so to the extent that this is a policy that, number one, I don't agree with, but, you know, I'm just one person, but I think there will be enough dissension with regard to this that it will detract from the power of this particular proposal. And because of that, and it's a policy and this is a funding year, I recommend that we take that out of this bill and use it, you know, something to look at next year in a policy year, but for the purposes of going forward and building unilateral support, that it not be a part of this bill. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate Senator Bonhoff's comments. I think it is important to maintain this proposal as a part of the bill. I think it's important for us to deal with some policy items, even if it's a funding year. And I think, you know, there is some widely held view that the Met Council is an agency who perhaps is not as accountable and as responsive to the region which it's charged to serve and which it's charged and empowered to raise taxes. And so it seems to be a bit of a mismatch for an entity like the Met Council to be solely an executive branch agency. You know, it doesn't have the kind of connection similar to what a city council or county board would have to the region that it's empowered to administer significant services for and raise taxes on. And so this proposal, the goal of this proposal, as proposed by Senator Wieger and then contained in this larger bill, is to create that match between establishment of policy and administration of services and the ability to levy taxes and the kind of accountability and responsive that it needs to have to those communities and that population.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, just one comment on the lack of responsiveness on the part of the Met Council. I think that we as legislators hold that ultimate responsibility because until we pass legislation that authorizes the Met Council to spend to the level that we need them to spend, I think that their hands have been tied. And so I'm hopeful that we would see a different kind of level of responsiveness, and I believe we would, because I think they're very committed to transit in our region, that should we pass this large of a funding bill, nobody would be more excited than the Met Council to use these resources to go forward. And with that, I will let it go. Thank you.
Well, I would just say if the Met Council were as excited as I'd like them to see about this bill, they'd be at this table testifying for it, but now they're constrained by the executive from supporting this bill. So as happy as they might be privately, they're constrained from advocating. They should be at this table advocating for a bill like this, and they're not. And that's, I think that's very telling, and that's what this bill would address. With that, I will, unless anyone else wants to debate the subject. Another policy item, and I apologize, my summary doesn't track quite with my own personal notes, so I'll just describe some of the policy provisions that are contained. There is an expansion of the transit taxing district so that it corresponds to the 7-county metropolitan area. That's an attempt to reflect the current world circumstances, the fact that when the transit taxing district was established, the development in the metropolitan area was much different, and those folks were much, much farther out. Development has now caught up and has expanded out to those areas, and many of those people, we saw the maps, of course, that the Met Council presented. Many of the folks are outside the transit taxing districts are actually fully engaged in using transit. This also gives them the ability to bring more transit out to those areas, build the kind of park and ride facilities that we know would be used out there. There is this bill, you know, because the funding in this bill is adequate to serve the task to run our transit systems as we envision, the need to ask counties to levy against their own property taxes for the purpose of operating transit would be stopped, and then the county's contribution to the capital portion of any given transit proposal, any given transit project, would be capped at 10% of any given project. This is something that, of course, happened a number of years ago when the operating dollars weren't available and Hiawatha Light Rail needed to be brought online, and Hennepin County was asked to pay the full freight. All of the operating, was scaled back to 50%, and that seems to have somehow been kind of a backdoor method of establishing a state policy of running these state facilities, very different than we do for state roads, with local dollars. We do adopt the paratransit service standards, as was proposed in a bill that I brought forward, which would allow those in the disabilities community to receive 14 hours of service per day, allow them some ability to reserve, to call for a ride of a short length on the same day, but able to reserve a ride of a longer length, up to 4 days ahead of time, and also ask the disabilities paratransit services operators to see about coming together and figuring out if there's a way that they could combine or coordinate their dispatch services. We have quite a patchwork of services for of paratransit for people with disabilities, and it gets pretty confusing. People being dropped at county lines, people having to figure out who to call if they're taking a certain kind of trip, and it gets to be quite a hindrance, and actually works against the interests of mobility for that community. We have a couple of agency bills that the Met Council brought forward, dealing with LRT construction, giving Met Council upon designation by the governor the authority to be the lead agency to construct light rail transit. We have the agency bill dealing with Metro Transit Police, allowing them to better coordinate with other police jurisdictions and giving them the forfeiture seizure authority if they're if they're the lead agency who, just like other police agencies, if they, you know, catch the perpetrator in the commission of a crime and certain types of property are being used in the commission of that crime, police agencies have the ability to seize that property and benefit from that effort on their part. This gives the Metro Transit Police that same ability as others. And with that, we do have the endowment established in state statute that would take 25%. This is in the out biennium, so it doesn't deal with any surpluses in the current in the current budgets, but it's a proposal brought forward by Senator Rest. In future years, I think the effective date is in the future biennium, would direct a certain portion of any future surplus into an endowment fund that would be for transportation purposes with the 36-4. Actually, I don't recall exactly, but a certain split between roads and transit. And I believe it's her intention to conform to the spirit of the it's a 60-40 split with the 38-2 split between Greater Minnesota and metropolitan area transit purposes. And that is a very, very swift 40,000-foot overview of Senate File 1672, the committee report.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dibble, I know that you're very passionate about the subject of transit, and I can see the hard work that went in here, and I can definitely tell that you know, if someone were going to write a bill to put in everything they wanted, I know that you honestly want these things, and these are the things that you think are best for the state of Minnesota. Transit. But from my view, it's very disturbing, because it looks like it was prepared without regard to the consequences for the people that will have to pay for these services. For instance, Carver County is part of the 7-county metro area. You're going to impose a tax on Carver County and Scott County. None of the proposals for transit will reach our communities. And so you're asking us to pay for projects and for transit that doesn't really serve our community, and you're going to sign us up to serve on a joint powers agreement. Joint powers agreements normally are done willingly by the parties that want to accomplish a purpose. And in this case, you're going to force our residents to pay a tax that doesn't give us a benefit, and you're going to sign us up to serve on a joint powers agreement where the members of that joint powers agreement acting on our behalf can accomplish nothing for us. And I'm sitting here next to Senator Koch, who I greatly treasure as a friend and a fellow senator here. She lives in Wright County, and I'm wondering, why isn't she here? Because I have to be here. I'm next to the 7-county metro area. I'm next to Hennepin County. But why aren't her residents going to help pay for Senator Bonhoeff's project and for Senator Saltzman's project? And if you're going to do this, shouldn't you ask the residents if they want this? Is a referendum so out of line here? It seems to me that in all the other local option sales taxes, we have a referendum. And I know this isn't exactly a local option sales tax, but from my point of view, we're going to ask residents if they want, we should ask residents if they want this and if they're willing to pay for it. And I don't agree with the boundaries on how you've chosen who's going to pay, other than it clearly shows that the residents of Carver and Scott are going to be asked, and other residents asked, to subsidize government benefits that they will not use and will have no access to. So with that, I think it's fundamentally flawed, deeply disturbing, and I hope that the Transportation Committee will not adopt this. It doesn't even look like the United States of America in this bill.
Senator Dibble?
Well, I don't know quite how to respond to the final statement, but I would say that two points. One is certainly folks who participate in the, you know, in the joint powers, you know, will be at the table. And we'll have a role in stating, in deciding whether or not money that's raised and spent in the metropolitan area is going to benefit their population. That's my intent, and that's my goal. And I know that you know, folks who are now, you know, beyond where we've typically thought of transit services in the past are asking for and looking for more and significant transit service. That's just a fact, and you know, that's something that we've been able to learn from our town hall meetings all around the metropolitan area. For counties that are beyond the metropolitan area, what we hope to be able to accomplish is that, you know, through a local option referendum, you know, because, you know, those counties, of course, would be comprised of less than 1 million people. So we have to give the empowering, enabling legislation that's called for in statute. They could join in and become a part of the 7-county metropolitan area joint powers agreement for the purpose of corridor planning for both roads and transit. And that's something to remember, of course, that this money that's raised in the metropolitan area can be used by the 80-20 split for both roads and transit. So my goal is definitely to get people to the table, get them a voice, get them involved and engaged in envisioning what's possible and what they desire for transit services to their area.
Senator Saltzman.
Yes. To Senator Ortman's point, Mr. Chair, when I look at page 41 and the communities in Washington County who have been in the transit area, taxing area, we've been waiting in line. I have no projects as of January 3rd when I came into office. There were no projects in my district. There was nothing planned. The maps were blank. There was nothing going on, and yet people in my community were paying. We're paying for districts that were happening around the area, including in Center Coke's area with the North Star going up. We've been paying for that. We've been waiting in line, and I would encourage you to be an advocate for your community. If your community wants transit, my community talked about this and said, we're never getting anything. But as I talk to them, they are so excited about the possibilities because they're tired of the congestion. They're tired of hearing about all these great ideas, and they're seeing the possibilities. My businesses are the ones who are talking to me about transportation and transit because they see the possibility for economic development. I said on business, industry, and jobs, the incredible things we hear about the possibilities in terms of new industries emerging, and where are they going to go? They're going to go outside of our inner core communities to look at where the workforce is. So I'm excited about this because there are people who are not currently in the transit district who are using transit. And this makes it more fair and balanced and also creates that pool to encourage future development. So that's where I'm coming from. So I don't have a lot of projects. I have preliminary design. I don't have a lot of big things happening in Washington County right now, but we want to be able to start thinking big and bold.
We've got Senator Dahl, then Senator Jungbauer, and then Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on that note, in my district, we have a park and ride, and we pay for that service. And yet half of the people using that service live just across the border outside of the district, taxing district. So they're using a service that they're not paying for. Eventually, our metropolitan area is going to expand out into Carver County to the degree that Burnsville is and some of these other areas. And unless we're going to put a fence around these areas where there's going to be no development, transit is going to become a part of it sooner or later. I think the expanding that out makes sense. Our current boundaries are saturated. They were set up, 40 years ago? And, the reason we were put here is to put out a forward-thinking policy. And I think it makes complete sense that we would begin looking at the overall, metropolitan area, which is a 7-county area.
Thank you. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, and actually, Senator Ortman, you should have been around last night for the comment because, we do need to look at this. We do need to have forward thinking, and Senator Dibble, I think, has done a good job on a lot of this and not thought about other things. My comment last night was, some people, Senator Dibble's district, for example, get the gold mine and some of us get the shaft, so it's not good that way to get some new taxes without things. And I think we need to think that through, and as we look at the big bill and the modest bill or whatever we're looking at, what I think our constituents have said, whether it's at the transit meetings, whether it's at all our other meetings, is, guys, as a legislature, when you're doing these things, we want to see the results of what we're paying for. So we have to go home, if we vote in favor of something like this, I have to go home to my district and say, gee, guys, we just kind of put you in the big taxing district, but, oh, by the way, you're not going to get anything. And when I was a mayor of East Bethel, we fought to get park and rides, and we've got one park and ride and money for another one, and we fought to get a bus to service those, and we've never gotten that. And I think I'm as probably one of the best Republican advocates for transit there is, and yet I can't vote in favor of putting some tax money there without knowing that there's going to be an outcome or something there. And I think you've solved part of this, Senator Dibble, by saying we would elect Met Council, because at least if they're a taxing authority, there's a direct connection there. direct saying taxation with representation. So that part of the hook I get, but, you know, we have to be really concerned. A lot of other districts out there, Senator Carlson, you know, you're kind of sitting in that little vacuum there too. So while these are good ideas, we really got to be able to go home and justify that it does give us some opportunities. So we got to look at that, members.
Well, Senator Jungbauer, I think that if we're successful in getting a larger package put together and enacted into law, everybody in the metropolitan area, whether you're in the taxing district right now or outside of it and soon to be in it, I think everybody's going to see the benefit. So, Senator Bonoff, you were next. Senator Bonoff?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, as we've been going around to these transit hearings, they've shown us maps around who is, in fact, using the park and rides. And to Senator Dahl's point, what we saw is that there's these huge clusters all outside the transit taxing district where people are driving from outstate and then parking and then taking advantage of transit. And right now it's obviously buses. And so I would be hopeful that in this particular case that the people in your district might want to park and ride and take the Southwest Transitway that's going to end up in Eden Prairie and take that, whether it be to downtown Minneapolis or then on to St. Paul, that I would suspect that people might be anxious about that. They'd save parking, they'd save gas, they'd save, you know, time sitting on the highways. And if, in fact, your district might consider wanting something on a more direct basis, then maybe you ought to put forward a proposal to study that as well.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, to Senators Bonoff and Saltzman, I appreciate the fact that you want to participate, your communities want to participate in this. I hope that you would also be respectful of the fact that my community might not want to and should not be forced to join this program over their objections. And so I'm saying that's the fundamental flaw here, is there should be community buy-in. If you're going to raise the taxes for transit, then the community should believe in it and support it in that way. And I'm not sure we do that with the method that's set out here. We're going to impose a tax without asking the communities whether they want to participate or not, or whether they value the benefits that we'll be spending the money on. And so that's the fundamental problem. I don't disagree that maybe, Senator Saltzman, your community members, some of them might want to participate, and you're probably a good spokesperson for them. And the same for you, Senator Bonoff. But I think the fundamental problem here is we're not going to ask the residents if they see the value in it and if they want to participate in it. And I can assure you that I'm not going to see transit out to New Germany and Hamburg, nor would Young America in my lifetime. And the residents right across the border in Sibley and McLeod County, they're not going to pay the same taxes. What do you think that this tax will do to those communities that are suffering financially right now? Do you think that that's going to be a hub? It's going to turn into a hub where they have a higher metropolitan area sales tax in New Germany? Or do you think that the people are going to go to Hutchinson and Glencoe and buy things? I think that's maybe the case. So there are some consequences here. There should be community buy-in. I'm glad there is in your communities, but there isn't in mine. And I don't think they should be forced to pay these taxes and to raise these taxes when we've not asked them to support them.
Well, I think the bottom line here is that the expansion of this taxing district, bottom line is, to me, it makes sense. Because if you saw the map of where the people live that are using these park and rides, some of them are your constituents that are currently not paying. And Senator Dibble, did I understand yesterday correctly that this was it's on the property tax statement and it's about $5 a household, or roughly right around $5?
Yes, Mr. Chair. It's a very small amount on given property tax, contrasted with the other part of my bill, which deals with counties being forced, frankly, with a gun to their head to levy directly for the operating of transit services that touch their specific county. What the goal of this bill is to start to do away with the mentality that seems to have gotten in place in Minnesota over the past 10 or so years, in which we're, none of us seem to be interested in the vitality of the whole, the vitality of the whole metropolitan area. We've gotten so parochial and so divided up community to community. We put into a large pool the Highway User Fund that benefits road projects all over the state, and I'm happy to make sure that the North Shore Highway is in good shape and it serves the folks as well as the tourists who are traveling in that part of the state, or the roads in the Red River Valley, or the roads down in Senator Vickerman's district. And we just accept that the vitality that comes from sharing in that pot of money, we have certain sorts of formulas that try to recognize various differences around the state, but we try really hard to make sure that we're being pretty fair in the administration of those funds. It's apparent that folks are interested in returning to that time in Minnesota in which we all have some interest in the success of every community, and we all benefit from the overall vitality and success of the entire metro area. My interest is not in drawing money from one part to benefit another part. My interest is making sure that everyone fully participates, everyone benefits, both locally and in terms of the larger picture, the larger discussion.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, I really appreciate all that you do on this bill, and you're a very good advocate for your position. But I think the same could be said if we didn't subsidize, but rather ask the people participating in these transit programs to pay fully for the services that they obtain. And this bill creates all kinds of subsidies for Hennepin County and the light rail. It creates subsidies for the people that ride in Senator Saltzman's district, or the people that park in mine and ride from the Southwest Transportation Corridor. So I think fundamentally you could correct the problem if you just wanted to make sure that people pay for the services that they receive. But in this case, what you're asking for is the shift. You're shifting money from folks that don't use the system to people that do use the system. And I think that's another area where there's a big disconnect between the capital and the people that pay the bills in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, I reassure Senator Ortman, Hennepin County is going to be a net contributor to everyone else's service. Hennepin County raises far and away the bulk of the money that is going to be a part of this proposal. Folks are going to benefit greatly from Hennepin County's participation in this. We're going to probably net loss of money. We're going to be shipping money to lots of other places out of Hennepin County. If anything, I should be in trouble with my Hennepin County delegation colleagues.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, I'm the opt-out organizations, will they get a portion of these dollars, or will, how is that going to play out?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olsen, and then there's also going to be, I think the Met Council is going to bring forward on Thursday a technical fix to the opt-out communities, not a fix, but a recognition of how the opt-out communities would continue to receive dollars. But there is no change, basically no change. Opt-out communities would continue to fully participate in the share of these revenues as they have. There's no change.
Before we take the vote, is there anybody in the audience that wants to testify either in support or against the bill? And also make it noted that the Met Council did provide testimony last night that they did not like the elected Met Council portion of this bill. So let the record reflect that. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a procedure question. Is the point to adopt the report and then have the report before us as a part of the larger bill before we start with amendments, or what is the, you had briefly explained before, I'm just curious about where the amendments will fit.
Senator Larson, what we're going to do is we're going to adopt this committee report so that it's in the big committee, and this committee report right now is being inserted into the large transportation bill. Yeah, there's parts of it in the small bill, but the whole thing will be in the big bill. On Thursday, when we come back after everybody's had a chance to look at the two bills and kind of get a good idea of what's going on. Then we'll take amendments on Thursday.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You had an amendment in mind already?
Multiple, Mr. Chair. No. I have a couple, yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none on the adoption of the committee report, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Carlson. Disappointed souls back there.
Do we have copies of the bill ready to hand off?
This is Murphy's bill, but it's just without tax increases.
She says no.
They're still warm. They're here.
They're warm off the press.
I'll sell mine for one banana.
You'd be getting a good deal, Senator.
Don't like apples, but.
Was this the conservative one or the Mercedes Benz?
Okay.
Oh no, she has to put them down.
See, she's. They taste like dessert, don't they?
Should we just go ahead? Should we begin?
Oh, I think when it's quiet.
Are more copies needed?
More copies are needed.
That's page.
Oh, I thought it was in Scott's.
We've requested more copies, so there would be more copies coming. This is the transportation appropriations bill that of Senator Murphy, and it does not have a bill number. It has Senate Council number 5501 up in the upper right-hand corner. And Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and committee members, this is a fiscally constrained bill. This is the budget document that, if all else fails, will move forward. And I'll go through and hit some of the highlights of this bill. Article 1 is a transportation appropriations, and starting in line 1.28, you'll see the numbers as they're broken down. This does include the motor vehicle lease tax is included in these appropriations. Sections 2, 3, and, boy, it goes on for quite a while, all talk about how those monies are divvied up. You'll also see that starting on page 2, we talk about some of the smaller appropriations that are made for aeronautics and airport development. On page 3, there is we're missing one sentence in here between 3.27 and 3.28. It should say of this appropriation, it should say $5.5 million for the ports, and of this appropriation, the $50,000 that you see below. It goes on through page 4, talks about state road construction program. Page 5 talks about the highway debt service. This is just the ongoing debt service that we traditionally have to pay for. When you get to page 6, we start talking about local roads, county state aids, municipal state aids. It's got the numbers there. These numbers, once again, they reflect the 60-40 split on the invest money and also the new money that is appropriated through the motor vehicle lease tax. On page 7 in subdivision 6 on 727 talks about the this is one of the things that we've been putting off and putting off and putting off, but this is the town road sign replacement program. We're going to fund that at $5 million. That's a program that's been around here since before Keith Langseth was a senator, when they were still using cartways. But, you know, this is a sign program that needs to happen, and for a lot of people out in our neck of the woods, it means a lot. Keep going through. Section 9 has, I'm sorry, page 9, subdivision 9, talks about contingent appropriations. These are appropriations that are made kind of in the interim on an approval of the governor and written approval of at least, we changed this so that it's written approval of at least 5 members of a group consisting of, and it's the LAC committee, the Legislative Advisory Commission, and it's stipulated in Minnesota State Statute 3.30. We're adding a couple of folks to this because I thought that it was inappropriate the way that it was in statute. And we're going to add the ranking minority members of the House of Representatives and the Senate committees with jurisdiction over transportation finance. So that would be, in our case, Senator Jungbauer would also have the opportunity to look over those contingency appropriations. On page 10, I want folks to realize that under this bill, Hennepin County is still going to pay half of the operating costs for the light rail. Because of a fiscally constrained bill, there's no way to give a little bit of relief to Hennepin County, who is footing about 50% of the bill. Most of what comes next are basically the governor's where the governor has been at over the past few years and some of their recommendations. Page 11 starts in on public safety. The high point is on page 13, we are adding $3.7 million to add those 40 state patrol members that the governor had requested. The Senate has always pushed to have more and more state troopers out on the road. This is consistent with the way that the Senate has always approached the state patrol, and I would hope that in the uneventful event that this bill would have to become law, that people could support this. Members, this is also going to be in the big bill, and I think in the big bill there might be a little bit of change in some of the money, but we do have money appropriated for at least 40 state patrol members in the big bill. This one has the 40 extra. Then we go on and talk about some of the driver and vehicle services, some traffic safety on pages 14 and 15. On pages 16, these establish funds by which the metropolitan area and the greater Minnesota, basically a change of names and some authorization of a little more money, but it's all pretty self-explanatory. Flipping over to page 18, down on starting on lines 1825, is the breakdown of the motor vehicle lease tax money, and I believe that the language in both the bills is going to be the same. Folks, I wouldn't worry too much either when we're talking about the lease vehicles or the 60-40 split on the invest money. I would hope that you don't pay too much attention to what the numbers are, except in year 2011-2012. Because that's after the full phase in. And the numbers look very strange as we're phasing all this stuff in, but we need to keep our eye on what we want in the end after 2011. What is our objective? Our objective on the motor vehicle lease tax money is that 50% of this money be deposited in the Transit Assistance Fund established earlier in the bill. 37.5% of the 50% goes to the Metropolitan Area Transit account, and 12.5% goes to the Greater Minnesota Transit account. If we flip over to page 21, same thing applies. This is for the invest money, starting on line 21-22. 38% is going to be deposited in the Metropolitan Area Transit account, and 2% into the Minnesota account, Greater Minnesota Transit account. And then once again, when you look at the percentages, you say, well, you know, Greater Minnesota is kind of getting the short end of the stick because we're only getting 2% of that money, but in discussions with Senator Dibble and others, they understand the need to have transit in Greater Minnesota, and that's why we were able to get more of that money under the lease vehicle tax. Both of these, this bill. Let's put it this way. There's a deficiency bill that is going to take care of the 07 problem that we have currently for the rest of this biennium. And hopefully that bill moves on through here in the next few weeks and becomes law. And we will take the deficiency reports out of these bills. But the bottom line is that we've got the bottom line is on the fiscally constrained bill, everybody is going to be at least kept marginally whole, and that was the reason why once you see the dollar figures from these two accounts going into the transit accounts, you'll be able to see that the transit operations will continue in the metropolitan area and they will continue in Greater Minnesota. Even with the addition of the lease vehicle tax money, I can guarantee that the things that need to happen are not going to happen with this bill. Article 3, this is something that we've been trying to do for a long time. And we're just going to put it in a budget document because this
needs it. Senator Murphy, Senator Olson has a question.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, you said that you can guarantee that the things that need to happen are not going to happen? That's what I heard you say. Is that what you meant?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, under the fiscally constrained bill, yes, because they're even with using the Invest money and the lease vehicle tax money, there's still not enough money on the table to get done what needs to happen.
Okay,
and we're talking about, you know, the completion of North Star, Central Corridor, Union Depot, all of the what the big bill will provide for those functions, but
so
the small
so
bill won't.
Senator Olson.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, this is the fiscally constrained bill.
This is the fiscally
Senator
constrained
Murphy.
Bill.
Okay.
Even though there is a little more money in it than there's a little more money in there than what I think the administration had planned for.
Thank you.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Article 3 is the Driver and Vehicle Services, the Division of Driver and Vehicle Services. This is the governor's recommendations that we've, I think, been working on for several years now, and it does go ahead and establish that this department will be run on a fee basis. And I don't believe that there's we've heard this in our committee several times, and I don't think that this should cause anybody heartburn, but this will also be in the big bill, just so everybody knows. That goes on quite a while. Goes on to page 28. And like I said, that's the DVS stuff that is in this bill. We've all heard it here in committee. We've heard the testimony. And I don't believe that there's any opposition to any of those provisions. Article 4 talks about a couple of the provisions that need to be bonded for. I was very hesitant about putting any bonding in this bill since it is a fiscally constrained bill. But there's two projects that need to happen. This is the Mankato District Headquarters and the transportation building across the street. The Mankato building is the last building in Greater Minnesota to be rebuilt. And all the other ones have been taken care of. This has been hanging out there. It's been kind of a sore thumb for a long time. In regards to the Department of Transportation building across the street, we would be negligent in our duties if we didn't provide funds to get that done this year. We're opening ourselves up to a lawsuit if we don't do that, put it that way. Article 5 goes on to talk about some statutory changes. It creates a fund for the Transportation Endowment Fund for future surpluses. I believe that this is something that Senator Rest has been looking for. It talks about some breakdowns of money and how it is going to be applied either to the distribution fund or the transit fund. And it goes on, this article has several sections in it. There's also a couple lines down on 2928 and 2930 that have blank percentiles in it. Ms. Boyd, do you have the percentages that go on that now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, I do. On line 2928, it should read 5.5% to the municipal turnback account. On line 2930, it should read 33.5% to the county turnback account. And then the remainder would be on 2932, 14.5% to the flexible highway account.
Okay, folks, and this is what's been called the 5% flexible account. It's kind of a misnomer, but it is 5% of the overall money. Of that money, we've always had, if you see on lines 2926, 2927, there's always been a percentage of this fund allocated to the town road account and also to the town bridge account. Those percentages will remain the same, and the dollar figure will be roughly the same. What we did was the remainder of that money had traditionally went back to the discretion of the Commissioner of the Department of Transportation. We've taken 5.5% of that money and turned it over to the municipal turnback account, and 33.5%.
Senator Olstein.
I'm not that good at math, but if we go back to page 28, you kind of stumped me here. And under line 28.18, I think there's a few too many zeros in there.
Mr. Chairman.
32 billion.
Senator Day.
Somebody in Senator Murphy's Billy is working on that. Yeah. I already give her that. So hopefully.
Good.
Just the scale.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Olstein and Senator Day. Well, yeah, it's a strained bill now, but that caused me a lot of strain. But yeah, 32 billion. I do believe that that's supposed to have a few less zeros. Am I right, Ms. Boyd? Three less zeros?
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, yeah, just about three.
Ms. Boyd.
All right. Well, Mr. Chairman, then I would move on 28.18, strike the last three zeros, and give discretion to Ms. Boyd to arrange the commas where they need to be.
Thank you, Senator Murphy. Intention to incorporate that in the final draft.
Okay, we'll incorporate that along with the percentages that we talked about earlier. Okay.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Olson. Right, so we were talking about the 5% money. And we've always felt that the legislature should have a little more say on what happens with the 5% money. So instead of just turning that back over to the department, we've stipulated some percentages here so that they know what our wishes are. There's a lot of county turnback. There's a lot of municipal turnback. We also want to be able to use this account to improve some of those routes. What we also do is we ask that the commissioner spend this money, and this is, we're on page 30 now, on lines 30, 12, 13, and 14. We're asking the commissioner to use this money for safety improvements on trunk highways, county highways, municipal highways, or streets, or for routes of regional significance. We've had major problems in making a good dent on some of the safety improvements that need to happen, and also some of the routes of regional significance, like Highway 14 down in Senator Day's district. This is going to add a little bit of money into that account, and hopefully some of those issues will be addressed. And then, members, on page 32 is some, in section 6, is some stricken language and new language from Senator Dibble dealing with some of the transit ways and trying to develop transit ways that are more cost-effective. All these provisions are part of Senator Dibble's bill. These are some of the policy portions that are just going to give the agencies involved in this planning some legislative guidance. And that continues on to page 34. And 35, 36, page 37 is more of some of the stuff that Senator Dibble has talked about. It gives the Metropolitan Council some authority, not that they really need it, but we're going to stipulate it here in statute about design, acquisition, construction for facilities to help provide transit. And members, I think that, on page 39, and I think that this is probably more problematic for Senator Ortman than anybody else on the committee, but page 39, the stricken language that starts on 39.3 is just the expansion of the Metro Transit Taxing District to include the whole metropolitan area. Folks, there's, and I wish Senator Ortman was here to hear it one more time, but she has many constituents that are taking advantage of the park and rides and other transit options, and they're not paying for it. And once again, we all know that every form of transportation, whether it's planes, trains, automobiles, barges, rickshaws, it doesn't matter. It's all subsidized. It's just at what level we're subsidizing it at.
Senator Murphy. Senator Jungbauer has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy, page 31, I think you didn't tell me. I'm not quite figuring out where this belongs, the $44 million in bonds for capital expenditures. I'm having a hard time trying to figure out where that goes. Page 31.
Yeah, Mr.
Senator Murphy.
Ms. Berzovsky, can you help me with that?
Ms. Berzovsky.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy and Senator Jungbauer, that is the Metropolitan Council Regional Bonding Authority.
Senator Jungbauer. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Berzovsky, that goes with the new taxing district where, so I'm having a little problem here, Senator Murphy, since this is the fiscally constrained bill and this has the new taxing district, which gives me heartburn. It doesn't seem too fiscally constrained.
Well,
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Jungbauer, even though this is a fiscally constrained option, we had to provide some balance because there is, and we could make this even more fiscally constrained by not doing the lease vehicle tax. And there's many members in the legislature that feel that if we are going to do a fiscally constrained, it should mean fiscally constrained. And we shouldn't have that money in there, which would not provide for the 50 or the 40 new state troopers and some of the other objectives that are in this bill that primarily benefit greater Minnesota. And so to provide a little bit of the balance, Senator Dibble and I, and, I apologize for not bringing you into the conversation on this bill, we decided that there needed to be a little bit of balance. There are things that need to happen in the metropolitan area, the full seven-county metropolitan area in regards to transit. The Met Council has... They have done a very good job with the dollars that have been allocated to them, but we just haven't done a very good job of allocating enough money. This is going to provide for a smidgen of hope for them. And then, members, the last thing that
Senator Jungbauer has a follow-up.
Well, yes, Senator Murphy, and actually, for the Met Council people in the audience, Met Council actually has done great things for my Senate district from Ramsey. There's a proposal for East Bethel, some things there. But again, the lease vehicle thing, I think that's fiscally constrained. I mean, we can directly attribute that to a transportation item, and it ought to stay in transportation. But again, to go to a new tax without any outcome for some of us, that's hardly what I would call a constrained form on the bill, Senator. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping the that we may have, along with Senator Larson there, we might have a whole pile of amendments here. So,
I understand.
Senator Murphy.
We'll hold our powder, but.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy, I'm trying to understand a section. Section 6, 473.399 begins the discussion on transit ways, light rail transit, and commuter rail in the metropolitan area. And then as I read through the section, it seems like we're inserting a lot of language with regard to light rail, that saying, you know, we have to do this for light rail, we have to do that for light rail. Can you explain to me why there's so much addressed in here with regard to light rail when what if, in fact, a study shows commuter rail is the way to go in a particular area? Do we already have language in our statutes that takes care of all that? I'm just wondering.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask Senator Dibble, the chair of that subcommittee, to take over.
Senator Dibble.
Can we repeat the question? We were discussing another item over here.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble.
Senator Bonoff.
During the section of this bill that talks about transit, the heading on the top of it says light rail transit and commuter rail in the metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. But then throughout the bill, at several points in the bill, it only refers to light rail, and it's underlined. And it, to me, I guess a concern is it's predisposed to thinking that as we go forward with these studies, and it gives a lot of detail in the design phase, definitions, and all that, it seems like we are showing a predisposition that light rail will be the preferred method. And I don't know that answer yet. I don't even think that will be the case. As the more geography we include in rail, I think the less cost-effective light rail will become and the more cost-effective commuter rail would become. And so I'm wondering, do we already have enough in statute about commuter rail? Is that why there's so much emphasis on light rail? Or should we be having the anytime we say light rail, should it just say rail? Or
Senator
is there
Dibble.
Federal language that means it should say light rail?
Right.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, I'll take a stab at it, and then I'll ask Met Council to help me respond. This is the agency bill. The goal of this bill, this is their agency bill, and the kind of the larger goal contained in that bill was to give the Met Council the ability to serve at the designation of the governor, give them lead agency status for the purpose of planning and constructing light rail versus the Minnesota Department of Transportation. In most cases, light rail would be contained within the metropolitan area, so it makes sense. Plus, you know, the Metropolitan Council is the lead transit agency for the metropolitan area, so it makes more sense rather than the Department of Transportation. Commuter rail, in most cases, would likely reach beyond the metropolitan area, so to designate the Met Council as the lead agency for commuter rail construction purposes is a different. I mean, we could do that, but it would be a somewhat different match. But the points you raise are excellent. Actually, I was noticing some of those. I probably didn't do as much diligence on this bill as I could have because agency bill, et cetera. And I was actually noticing some of those points earlier today, as a matter of fact, and intend to go back through it before we adopt the final big bill on Thursday. But perhaps the Metropolitan Council can help us respond.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator. Mr. Schreiber is here to kind
Senator
of
Murphy.
Maybe hopefully clear this up a little bit.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Schreiber, please state your name for the record.
Bill Schreiber with the Metro Transit Ways Development Board.
The
response is, and I think, Senator Bonoff, you raise an interesting issue. We're dealing with the Federal Transit Administration right now as it relates to the full funding grant agreement for North Star Commuter Rail. That is not a good time to talk about any changes in responsibilities between MnDOT and the Metropolitan Council. So there is an agreement between MnDOT and the Metropolitan Council. The Metropolitan Council will be handling the operation end of it so that it's a seamless process between going from commuter rail to light rail or to bus system, and the same tickets will work. And if you have questions about timing of the trains. You can call the Metropolitan Council if you have any issues with lost items. There's just one phone to call. As it relates to light rail, I think the consensus was that the process that they went through regarding Hiawatha was a bit clumsy, and the time to clear that up is right now before you get going with Central Corridor. I think after North Star is all completed, all of the agencies involved can take a look at the format at that time. There may be additional changes that in statutes that one would want to do, but the timing for that is not good right now when we're in the midst of the FTA process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble. It sounds to me like it's reasonable to leave it the way it is. I would just want to make sure that whenever we're looking at the, you know, if we do in fact get the go-ahead to do these studies, that we're considering all approaches and aren't, predisposed to light rail.
Senator Bonoff, one of the things that I'm seeing here is that, for instance, starting on page 32, light rail has actually been deleted in many places. And in the subdivision one, all forms have been added equally. And I don't see any places where light rail has been added.
It's later.
Senator Dibble, do you have a
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I just wanted to point out, as Senate Counsel has just pointed out to me, all the authority, all the responsibility, language that's similar to this language for commuter rail purposes is contained in the MnDOT sections of statute. So there is, a lot
Thank
of...
Thank you. That's
a lot
what
of,
I wondered. Thank
yeah.
you.
And Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, the only other thing that I want to mention is on 4120, there is the... there is the language in there for the Fridley Station. This was an issue that got a lot of discussion in the Transit Subcommittee, and the folks in Fridley, when the North Star line was first proposed, Fridley was always in until the very end, and then it was not in, and so this is just going to put Fridley back in. It's my understanding of it is it's going to be a little more expensive because most of the time commuter rail runs on the outside track, so that building stations is not much of a problem. This one is in the middle, and in the middle of a series of tracks, and so it would be a little more expensive, and it was decided because of the cost to be taken out. But I do believe with some of the extra money that is being acquired through the lease vehicle tax and going to transit that this would be an option that could be paid for. So that's a fiscally constrained bill. And if we want to work on it a little bit more, Senator Jungbauer, we can fix it up so that it is even more fiscally constrained. But I would caution folks from doing that because, one thing – the time's right. People have, I think the population was very clear. I believe the public was very clear that they wanted road improvement and transit improvement to happen. I think that was very clear with the vote on the invest money. So I believe the time's right for us to go ahead and get that lease vehicle sales tax, even though, that's not hundreds of millions of dollars. It's a little bit to add to the pot. We can do a few things. We can buy some troopers and make some other adjustments. So as much as I'd like to move the football 20 yards down the field, if we can only go 3 yards in a cloud of dust, well, I guess it's 3 yards in a cloud of dust with this bill. But if we start peering back any more on it, this is going to be a quarterback sack instead of, right now we've got a very minimal gain with this bill. So, and Senator Rest, I know you like the sports analogies.
Yeah, we're in basketball season now.
Okay, basketball season, okay. Well, it's a fiscally constrained bill. I could, it's not as fiscally constrained as it could be, but I do believe that, you know, once again, we're moving forward. Not very much, but we are.
Mr. Senator Chairman? Murphy, we have a question from Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, did I miss the governor's bonding proposal in here?
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, yes, you did.
Okay. So you're more constrained, Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, you're more constrained than the governor in terms of transportation investment.
Madam
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, no, I don't believe so.
This bill is.
No, this bill actually doesn't put us in debt. So we keep everything north of the border. The governor's bill has a few dipsy doodles in it that because of the bonding that will drive us into debt for, I believe, 4 years out of the 20-year bond program. And I don't believe that that's fiscally prudent.
Any other questions?
And
with that, we will lay this one over for further consideration. There is another bill that's going to be presented, but the copies are not complete yet. There are copies that are on their way.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Chairman with
Senator Murphy.
It's only 2:20. Mr. Chairman and members, maybe I can walk through, because I do have a sheet that talks about what the big bill is. Maybe I can walk through. It's kind of a summary. I don't know if we have.
Would you like the summary passed out, Senator Murphy?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We could pass a summary out. We can talk about the generalities here. And then whenever the bills become available, we'll make sure that the members of the committee have them. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, he's over there right now.
Yeah, he does.
He does?
Okay. Yeah, it might be like scribbled all over by me, but he may have made some words. You could, why don't you offer him a clean one? Somebody may have cleaned it up while we were in here.
Yeah.
We haven't brought me.
Bills? There's just only like five came in. I asked them to just bring in the first ones and to keep bringing, you know.
I've got one here.
Candy.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Senator Murphy, there are more copies still coming.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and members, I haven't had a chance to look at the bill myself, so if we could just if we could walk through the summary, that would probably work out a lot better for all of us. And then we can go back, and if there's any questions, we can delve into the copy on the bill.
For the audience, there are many copies coming. In the summary, Article 1 is not complete in the summary, but it is in the bill. So, Senator Murphy, I'm not sure if you're going to start with another part, or are you going to start with Article 1?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to leave Article 1 until the very end. Mr. Chairman, if we have Ms. Boyd walk through Article 1, it would...
Senator Jungbauer, that's the question.
Saying Article 1 was the easy one.
Article 1 is the easy one, yes. Ms. Boyd will walk through Article 1 for us.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, Article 1 is just the transportation appropriations, including all the new revenues raised later in the bill. Just walk through some important, perhaps, rider language. Beginning on page 3, there's the same appropriation as in the fiscally constrained bill on the appropriation for the Port Development Assistance Program. And here the total appropriation is included, $5.5 million, of which $500,000 is for the purchase of dredging equipment. Okay. And at the top of page 5, there is a new rider including $1 million for the first year of technical support of trunk highway congestion reduction under the Urban Partnership Program.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Rest.
Where is she reading from?
From bill.
Which bill?
We don't have it yet.
I was going to say.
We don't have enough copies yet.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, how about I just start at Article 2 and we'll go back to Article 1.
Okay.
All right.
That sounds good. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Article 2 is a stipulation for the fuel tax. Section 1 will increase our state's gas tax from the current 20 cents to 30 cents a gallon, effective July 1st, 2007. It also imposes corresponding increases in the special fuel taxes. Section 3 of that will index the fuel tax starting April 1st, 2009. The indexing just means that the department will use calculation much like the one that was used in Wisconsin when they did this, so that the gas tax would go up according to basically according to cost. Article 3 talks about the vehicle registration tax. I think that Article 3, the important thing to remember is we're not going back to pre-Ventura days. We're only trying to capture about half of that decrease that we made during Governor Ventura's administration. And the other thing to note is your car that you own today, the vehicle that you own today, does not go on the new schedule. Let me say that again. If you don't trade cars, you don't go on the new schedule. But if you happen to go out and buy a new automobile or trade and get a different vehicle, you will go on the new schedule. It's my understanding that the new schedule, most of the money that is going to be captured in future years under the new schedule will be on newer vehicles. The depreciation schedule continues to depreciate so that people who have 5, 6, 7, 8, 10-year-old cars are not going to be paying, are not going to be footing this bill. In other words, you know, same thing applies as what used to apply. The older your car is, basically the less you're going to pay.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, what's the effective date of that? Because I wonder just long, how long is the rush going to be to change cars before that sets in?
Mr. Chairman. And
Senator Murphy.
And I believe that that's the effective date of the, I think we were going to set that up August 1st.
Was it? July.
I'm sorry, Senator Olson, July 1st, contiguous with the fiscal year.
Well, yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Leave it long enough, as Senator Dibble just said, well, you know, with that would build up the motor vehicle sales tax.
Yeah.
So plan that carefully.
Yes, Mr. Chair, then we could
Senator Dibble.
Deal with our deficiency this year. We'd have to make an appropriation from the general fund.
Yeah, there's
Chair.
Senator Langseth.
Senator Murphy, do we know what percent of the vehicles registered in the state are at the minimum?
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, we do, and I would ask. We can get that, but it's.
It is kind of a majority of cars, isn't it?
I think the effective date, if they can do it. Or
Mr. Chairman and Senator Langseth, Vehicle Services will provide those exact numbers for the committee. The last time I saw them, the largest percentage of payers are at the minimal level. And what this bill attempts to do and what we attempt to do with the language is to make sure that the people that are paying the minimum continue to pay the minimum in the future.
Mr. Chair, what you know, the
Senator Langseth.
The cars last so much longer than what they used to that I think you're getting just a higher and higher percentage. I was just wondering if we really shouldn't phase it down a little bit slower towards the end. As you know, I buy cars that are old, and I drive them until they're older. I think the one I got out in the front has been at the minimum for 6 years now, and it would kind of seem like maybe, you know, and it's a very good car. So. I don't really think we should necessarily raise the minimum, but it kind of seemed like there should be a little, it should go beyond the 10 years simply because of what's happening as far as vehicles are concerned.
Okay.
Senator Murphy.
Well, that's one thing about our committee. We're not at a loss of ideas. Now we've got two new ones here cropped up in the last 5 minutes. So,
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Murphy, what... how much money are you expecting to raise from this? Is there the fiscal note on it?
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest, we'll get to the numbers here later on, but I think Ms. Boyd does have a spreadsheet for the big bill here, and we'll get those passed out. we can run through the numbers in a little bit, but after it's fully phased in, it's a lot of money.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, you'll get the spreadsheet here,
and
I haven't
now.
Seen the spreadsheet yet, but it's a lot of money.
Mr. Chairman, as we go along, I'm just
Senator,
trying to
Senator
understand
Rest.
The magnitude of what this change.
Oh, of what each provision
Senator
is.
Murphy.
Yeah,
okay.
What of what mm-hmm. each yes. change does. So that's. So I would be looking on page one, the tab fee schedule changes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Is that correct? So mm-hmm. in this biennium, that would be $75 million. Is that right?
Right.
And, Senator Murphy.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest and for the committee, the numbers that we should keep our eye on are out there in fiscal year 2012.
Yes,
because that's when most of this bill becomes whole, when it's fully implemented. And so if you look in that column that says 2012, we get a good idea of what it is that we're exactly doing. And this is where I've asked for the committee to keep their eye. Keep your eye on the 2012 numbers, because that's our objective. We need to meet these numbers.
Senator Rest.
Senator Murphy, I'm just really trying to understand how it works. So there's a phase in of these increases to make the jump from $75 million in 08-09 to $227 million in 10 and 11. Mm-hmm. Why is there such a big jump? Is it because there's some sort of phase in of this, or what?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest, it's a natural phase in. In other words, if folks like Senator Langseth, who keep their vehicles for quite a few years, you know, it's going to take a while for them to trade and then get on the new schedule, and that's kind of how it's a natural phase in.
Okay, so Mr.
Senator
Chairman,
Rest.
So in this first biennium, a lot of people won't be buying a new car. That's
correct.
What you're saying. So
mm-hmm.
we would be paying still the 99 or whatever.
Correct.
It is. But as we move along, then more people will be buying new cars, in which mm-hmm. the full impact of the new schedule will be felt, and less and less. And this estimate just comes from behavior of how long people keep cars. I mean, is that how they do the estimate?
Senator Murphy.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest, you're correct. It's a very good estimate.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And this kind of follows the way that, just like you said, the traditional way that people normally keep cars and trade them in. And so mm-hmm. This is based on some pretty firm numbers.
Senator
Mr.
Rest.
Chairman, the relationship between the schedule that you're proposing here and what we had before Governor Ventura's proposal in whenever it was, in 2002, how does this compare to the schedule that we were operating under at that time? Do you know?
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest, I can't give you an exact change of the depreciation schedule. What I can tell you is under the pre-Ventura years, we were at this level. We dropped off down to this level. We're taking it about halfway back.
So it's still less than
Senator Rest.
Excuse me, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chairman, Senator Murphy. It's still less than what we had prior to the drop-off, the tax reduction mm-hmm. that Governor Ventura proposed.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest, you're correct.
Thank you. I appreciate the information.
Senator Rest, I think, you know, there's a couple of numbers that one needs to get their mind around, too, that cars are more expensive now, and you're working on a percentage of value, too. And so after second year, more people will be paying the higher rate. So it ramps up real quickly and then flattens.
Thank you.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members, we could move along to Article 4. And Article 4 is the local sales tax that is in the bill. And this is the same language as we heard earlier from Senator Dibble's bill. Basically imposes the sales tax on the metropolitan area and then allows counties outside the metropolitan area to do several different things. One is if you're a contiguous county with the metropolitan area, you can buy into their program, or you could say it was down in my neck of the woods, it was Goodhue County and Wabasha decided to enter into a joint powers agreement. They could do it between the two counties, or any county could basically do it on their own. And that does, and if you look at the spreadsheet, what kind of money that provides in 2012, just for the metro area, that's about $250 million. And I can guarantee you that there's more than $250 million worth of of projects that need to happen in transit in the metropolitan area. Article 5 is the county.
Chairman? Senator Rest.
Senator Murphy, if you don't mind if I'm asking.
No, that's fine.
I really want express some concerns about this article. First of all, as a Hennepin County legislator, I am concerned that there is not some weighting to the either by population or some other way of the membership on this joint board, so that it as it currently reads, it says that there would be a representative of each county by each county board. And it seems to me that I don't know what that would be, how it would be weighted, but I'm a little bit nervous about regional significance and having only one member of this joint board from Hennepin County, quite frankly. Secondly, and I have shared these concerns with Senator Dibble, in Subdivision 6, there is the allocation of the funding 75, 20, and 5, and I'm very concerned that we are not allowing a greater flexibility for the use of these funds and would favor more of an approach that had, you know, no less than a certain amount would go to one or the other, but not constrain the joint board to saying, you know, 75% has got to go to transit, 5% has got to go to bike programs and so on. And I may have an amendment to that effect. I'm just not comfortable with stating outright 75% is going to transit with no flexibility on the point of this joint board to decide otherwise.
Yeah,
it's just some concerns that I have with this program.
Right.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, duly noted. We had also had discussions, Senator Dibble, myself, and a couple other folks, about some of the splits that we did put in there. You know, we realized that could become problematic if there was an issue on either side of that equation that would require more money to be spent in one area and then all of a sudden be locked into this. So I don't believe that that's something that we're that we don't want to discuss. I think that this is something that we want to continue to discuss. And you know, this is, like I said, this is our springboard. And we can fix up our springboard any way we want. But the objective is, I should say this is our shot from the free throw line.
There you go.
The objective is to get it through the hoop. A three-pointer. Okay, we're going to back up a little bit.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
I kind of came in halfway through this, but I think this is the discussion of the metro-wide sales tax and the relative proportion between roads and transit purposes. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, as we were getting into the going through it being part of this bill, I was just expressing some concerns that I had with a few of the sections. One of them was that there's only one member from Hennepin County on the Joint Powers Board, and that makes me uncomfortable. And I don't know what kind of weighting would be appropriate, but more than one is. I'm looking at. I don't know how to do it yet.
Okay.
And then I'm uncomfortable with lack of flexibility in the formula.
Mr. Senator Dibble, does everybody on the committee have a copy of the bill yet?
No, I do not.
Do not.
Now I do.
More copies are coming.
All right.
Believe me, they are coming.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Senator Dibble.
Just respond to the flexibility piece. The reason the bill was written the way it was, you know, the portion that we adopted in the committee report that's been incorporated into this bill, the 80-20, is to recognize that there is a vision there's a plan, needs been established, and you know, and we have a long ways to go before we even start to keep up with peer regions on the subject of transit in the metropolitan area. Additionally, there is you know, money provided for local roads even within that that source, and you know, there's within the larger bill quite a bit of resource that's raised for specifically only roads purposes. It's walled off by constitutional amendment, including a portion of the motor vehicle sales tax that we're raising is going statutorily to roads, and only a portion of that to transit. You know, the lack of flexibility in the significant resources that we raise for roads, you know, isn't it? And so trying to do the 80-20 split in the sales tax is an attempt to recognize that there is a need for transit. We need to at least for the foreseeable future get up to par with other metropolitan areas around the country, and that's the spirit and the intent. You know, we do all kinds of flexibility on all the transit sources, not on the road sources, and you know, we're going to continue to fall further and further behind.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Dibble,
Senator Rest,
I appreciate that, but you know, I do feel these are my taxpayers, and I think within the funds that are going to be raised by the taxes that they pay, specifically for the metropolitan area, that lack of flexibility elsewhere does not mean that we should continue that lack of flexibility in the sales tax that we raise for in the metropolitan area. And I, you know, I don't have any problem with an approach that says not less than. We mm-hmm. had some problem with the invest language that way, but I don't have any mm-hmm. problem with that. But specifying a particular percentage is, I'm not convinced by your argument.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
I'm fine with not less than 80%.
Yeah, I know. See, that's right. Yeah. I'll have something
to rest
when we do amendments.
Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman and committee members, that's why we always have these discussions, is because I don't believe that any one of us has a lock on all the good ideas, but together I think we can make this pretty good. I might want to direct folks to Article 5. And Article 5 is the county wheelage tax. Currently, there's an offset on that, and that's why a lot of counties don't like using it. What we're going to do is we're going to authorize counties to, at a maximum wheelage tax of $20, that money is going to be collected by vehicle services and then redistributed back out to the counties where it came from. But it's going to take a little bit to get this program up and running. So when you look at what the revenue is on the spreadsheet, it's basically, this is what it's going to be if we do it today. But I'm sorry, Ms. Boyd says it's not on the spreadsheet.
Yes.
Okay. But you have to remember that it's going to take a year or two to do the programming so that the wheelage tax can be collected and then returned to the county where it came from. And that's just it's a programming thing, and it's complex, very complex. But the county wheelage tax is something that the Association of Counties and Ms. Loveroe have been asking for several years now. There are counties, one that I used to represent, Dakota County, that has just a boatload of issues and not enough money to address them. They're not getting enough money from the state to cover even their basic costs of their CASA roads, let alone build some east-west corridors. And in Dakota County, we all know that there are no good east-west corridors, and unless you're going north-south, you're kind of stuck. So we want to help some of these counties from out behind the eight ball.
Mr. Chair.
That's one way of doing it.
Senator Dibble.
And this wheelage tax, Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, goes to roads and bridges.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dibble, that's my understanding. Because earlier in the bill, I think we talked about the sales tax provision. The sales tax provision that we're going to allow the counties to implement, if they so choose, would be up to their discretion where the money would be spent, but that money could be spent on transit projects as well as road projects. So the wheelage tax relates strictly to vehicles. I mean, so we decided that it's probably best left with vehicles. We're trying as best as we can, committee members, to tie the tax in with where we're going to spend the money.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I know the wheelage tax is referenced in the Constitution. Was there, I don't recall if there's any restriction on its application, if it is for, it's by counties, but I'm not sure if transit is discussed in there.
Well,
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, we'll have when Ms. Berezovsky comes back, we'll have her look into that.
Mr. Chair, I'll just point out it says Road and
Senator
Bridge.
Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It says Road and Bridge Funds on lines 25 and 27 of page 25. I'm just pointing that out.
Yep.
That's in the spirit of the previous conversation.
It's added new, but Senator Olson, do you think that conflicts with constitutional language?
Mr. Chairman, not what's in the bill. Discussion of, I think, going into transit might, but I'm not sure. I know that the wheelage tax is at least authorized in the Constitution. I was surprised to see that when I read that article this fall.
Well, Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, however we can make it fit in this bill, that's what we'll do. If we can expand the use of that wheelage money, we'll do it. If we can't, we can't, and we'll stick with what we've got.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think it's
Senator
legitimate.
Olson.
If we're looking at a user fee, wheelage is related to the roads and bridges, and I think it belongs there.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, members, Article 6, and to answer Senator Langseth's earlier question, Ms. McCormick just handed me a note, and she says approximately 50% of the vehicles are at the minimum on the registration tax currently. Yep. And that she'll get an exact number for you later.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Langseth.
We stop to think about it. You're at the minimum with a 1997 vehicle. And a 1997 vehicle nowadays isn't a very old vehicle. You know, 30, 40 years ago, they were about shot at 10 years, but they aren't now. And one thing you could do is, I see you start dropping just 5% a year at 40%. Maybe you could step that up to 50% or something. It wouldn't extend it much, but it kind of seemed like you shouldn't be at that low a level for a 1997 car.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Langseth, I got a 97 Chevy pickup truck sitting out front there with about 240,000 miles on it that still runs great and everything, doesn't have any rust on it, but it's tired.
Senator Jungbauer.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, Senator Langseth, I was going to kind of come in with the same idea. I have a 2002 sitting in the ramp over there that's creeping up on 200,000 already. So, yeah, she's got some issues. Might look good, but we got to be careful there.
Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as long as you don't sell it, Senator Jungbauer, and buy something new, you'll be just fine. Mr. Chairman and members, Article 6 is the motor vehicle sales tax and motor vehicle lease tax provisions in the bill. And there is a, on the spreadsheet, those numbers are reflected on the top and bottom of page 2. And then also on page 3. That's where those numbers are. This is the language which was On the invest money, which was voted on last fall as a constitutional amendment, it's a 60-40 split. The lease tax money was going to be a 50-50 split, 37.5% going to the metropolitan area transit, and 12.5% to the greater Minnesota transit account. Those numbers are reflected in the spreadsheets, and you'll find a lot of that language now through page, I believe, about 36 or 32 of the bill. 37, page 33 of the bill, Article 7, starts to talk about the county state aid fund distribution and what the distribution of those funds would look like. If you go, let's see, to page 35 of the bill, you're talking about Article 8, which is driver and vehicle services. And those are the same, that's the same fee schedule that is in the small bill. That goes on for quite a few pages, actually, in the bill, or at least it should. Yeah, until you get to Article 9, which is trunk highway bonds. What we're doing here in Article 9 of the trunk highway bond is Section 1 is the annual debt service surcharge. Basically what this says is that the surcharge has to be computated and that it's going to be paid with an increase in fuel tax. So the more money that we bond, the more money that we will drag off of the gas tax to pay for the bonding program. Folks, I don't think that you're going to find any I don't think you're going to find any argument any place in this building against using trunk highway bonds to finish off or start large projects. What you are going to find is you're going to find a lot of either disagreement or sometimes open hostility towards initiating bond programs that don't either pay for themselves or have some funding mechanism. We provide a funding mechanism here so that it's completely paid for. We don't want to be using, the 10 cents a gallon gas tax that we're currently trying to raise under this bill to be paying for debt service. We want that to be a separate mechanism. There's enough projects going around. There's enough bridges that need to be built. There's enough projects like Highway 14 that still need hundreds of millions of dollars to complete it, that we do need to have an aggressive bonding program. This is going to help us take care of that. This was something that was that Bowl, that used to work in our office, worked on, and this is part of his master's program up at the University of Minnesota Duluth. So we are using some of our homegrown talent to put together portions of this bill that actually make sense. I think that this is an exciting and new way. This is one of those innovative measures that the governor is talking about all the time. I believe that this meets that criteria. Does it have the dirty little T word hooked onto it? Yes, it does. But you know what? We can bond a lot of projects and get them done just with this one provision right here. And members, so that's Article 9 is authorizing trunk highway bonds at $200 million a year to approximately $2.2 billion of trunk highway bonds over a 12-year period. Then we'll go on to Article 10. You could go through the bill, and you may not be able to understand everything that's in there, but if you look at the summary, Article 10 starts off with a bill that Senator Wieger has been the chief author of, and that's the elected Met Council. If you go to sections 14 through 18 and then section 42, that is Senator Dibble's bill on paratransit services. Senator Rest has sections 10 and 11, which is the once again the endowment fund. Senator Dibble also has through Senate File 1498 in this bill sections 41 and then 44 through 49, which is the those changes in the light rail governance that we had alluded to in the discussion on his bill. And then section 35 is the regional rural rail. I'm starting to wear down here a little bit, but that's the regional rail authorities that Senator Dibble is and the 10% of the capital cost, and that's in Senate File 1513. These are all bills that we've heard. Sections 50 and 53 are Senator Dibble's bill 1136, deals with the Metropolitan Transit Police. There's another thing that I'm also going to insist that we put in this bill sometime at a later date, which is a stipulation that we need to have more transit police available. I think that the complement needs to go up some, Senator Dibble, and I think that that's probably I think that the folks over at the Met Council would like to do that, and if we're going to be able to provide them with additional resources, especially additional resources in the tune of a couple hundred million dollars, that the least that we should ask for is to have more of a complement of transit police. I know that there's that there was an incident recently. There's been several incidents recently. One was a very violent incident, and we want to make sure that that riders of transit services in the metropolitan area feel very comfortable, and that we have enough of those transit cops around, because they do a good job, and sometimes they're dealing with they're dealing with people that might have had you know, two or three dozen too many drinks, or you know, so sometimes it's pretty tough. Pretty tough cases that they get to deal with, and I think that they need a little hand over there.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Murphy. I'm very supportive of that initiative. I think our current system probably doesn't have enough security, enough police. I mean, we want people to be safe on the transit system. We also want people to perceive that they're going to be safe, you know, so that they use transit. They're not frightened to use transit. We're defeating all of our goals if people who otherwise have choices just stay off buses and stay off of trains because of the kinds of stories we've seen in the last week. Yeah, I mean, it's terrible to see those stories. They may be few and far between, but, you know, I'm guessing that we'll see a dip in ridership as a result of those stories back to back. So we need more police today on our buses, on our trains, and certainly we'll need, you know, more as we grow a system in the metropolitan area. And I think we're going to bring them the resources they need to do that. And so it will be a good addition to this bill.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, going on further in Article 10, Senator Dibble also has his Senate File 1164. This is Section 43, and it deals with that with an issue that we touched earlier about the Met Council bonding. Sections 12 and 13.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. I should mention, too, we had that discussion about the transit taxing district, and it's important for members to know that we do actually spend capital proceeds within the existing transit taxing district outside the transit taxing district for paratransit and other services. So there's about 10% of those property taxes that we levy within the transit taxing district are spent for services in the contiguous seven-county metro area for folks outside of the transit taxing district. That's a carryover from the time when it was all taken off the property taxes, and now that portion that doesn't come through property taxes, some of that gets shared beyond. So something, it's important for people to know, because I think there's a perception that somehow people aren't sharing or going to be served, and they currently are.
Senator Murphy, Ms. Berezovsky has a correction to make on the summary.
Okay. Mr. Chair, and Senator Murphy, and anyone else who's following the summary, right around where Senator Murphy is there on page 8, where it lists those specific sections, 12 and 13 ended up getting combined. So that is just section 12 that redistributes the 5%. And then the next paragraph, section 33, should be 32, and 55 should be 54. And article 11 is coming in separately. It's not stapled mm-hmm. to the rest of the bill right now.
Right.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just a second, Mr. Chairman. I lost my page here. Okay, I'm ready.
Chairman, you gave some numbers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson has a question.
Mr. Chairman, I missed the writing down the numbers when we were discussing it earlier, but on page 49, there's some blanks of percentage in that 5% redistribution. Could we get that again?
Yeah.
Ms. Berezovsky will. I'm sorry, Ms. Boyd will provide the missing numbers. Page 49.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, those numbers again are on line 49.4 should read 5.5% to municipal turnbacks. Line 49.6 is 33.5 to county turnbacks. And 49.8 is 14.5% to the flexible highway account. 14.5.
Thank you.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Section 12 is what we talked about earlier with the 5% money, and I believe that this language is exactly the same as in the fiscally constrained bill. Section 32 is a preemptive strike on a bill, at least one bill, that is floating around members, and this deals with the unrefunded gas tax receipts that normally go to the motorboats, the snowmobiles, the all-terrain vehicles, off-road vehicles, forest roads, and off-highway motorcycles. But it starts on page 60 of the bill, and if you look at the percentages that used to be in there, like on 6021, it talks about motorboats at 1.5. We've kicked that to 1.695. Down on 32, it goes from for snowmobiles, it goes from 1 to 1.13. All of these have a slight increase. There's a bill floating around here that the ATV folks wanted that would kick their unrefunded receipts from 0.15 to 0.27. And they compulated that on current revenues. Since we are spending or raising much more money in this bill, their number is actually going to go from 0.15 to 0.17. And that actually gives them more money than under the, if it goes to 0.27 under the current gas tax. So when the folks for the all-terrain vehicles see this, and the off-highway vehicles, off vehicles, these are all of the specialty areas that we apply a portion of the gas tax money to provide services for these folks who are also buying gasoline. But when they see these percentages, they're not going to be happy. But what they have to understand is because there's a massive more amount of money on the table, these percentage increases that they're getting under this bill actually gives those funds more money. So they're turning out better here than it is with their bill. Like I said, this is a preemptive strike. We kind of smelled them coming a couple years ago. And so Senator Orata and myself both still the former Senator Orata and myself still both agree that we probably are not 100% in agreement with using the money in this manner, but it's been the tradition of the state of Minnesota to do this ever since the gas tax was initiated. And I've been told several times by constitutional scholars that this does meet constitutional muster, so I'm going to give up on it and let it go. There's also more money in here for the airports fund and a few of the other funds that that go on. Members, and that's Section 32 of the bill. Section 54 is just that language that Senator Chaudhry had about the North Star provision. There's also going to be another article, hopefully ready to go. Oh, it's here now, members. And this is Article 11. It is in your summary, and it's going to get handed out. But Article 11 is strictly the credit card payments. And I'm sure we've got several people here that are able to speak to this. But currently what goes on right now with our deputy registrars and over at the department, you know, we're not able, when we go into, get our new tabs, we're not able to use our credit card. We got to go to a cash machine, we got to get cash, or we can write checks. What this does is it puts our deputy registrars and our department, it puts them into the 21st century. They can actually use credit cards now. So I don't believe this has any opposition for anybody. Once again, actually, the department doesn't like the idea as it's proposed under the bill that is floating around. What we're floating here is kind of a hybrid so that the department is more comfortable with it and we still are able to use the credit cards. But, once again, we need to get into the 21st century because we're still doing things, kind of 19th century type stuff. We're writing checks and using cash, and I don't know too many people other than Senator Day that carries around too much cash in his pocket anymore. So. I like picking on Senator Day because he enjoys picking on me. And Mr. Chairman, committee members, that's the bill. And Article 11, I'll tell the committee right now that before this bill comes flying off the Senate floor and headed to the governor's office, we're going to have Article 11 tied up so that Ms. McCormick and the folks over at the department are comfortable with it. But it's time to start using credit cards because it's pretty convenient for our constituents and they would ask for it. They've asked for it, I should say. And Mr. Chairman and members, that's kind of the bill. And I could answer questions on generalities, but I haven't had chance to sit down and read through the text of the bill myself. Ms. Bierzowski and Ms. Boyd were here all night last night getting it put together, and we were still putting pieces together throughout the day. So, like I said, I haven't had a chance to actually read all the way through it, but I could take questions on generalities. I think I mean, if you look at Ms. Boyd's number list over here at the new generated revenue, I think we get a good idea that this bill has the potential of putting Minnesota back on the map when it comes to transportation services. And folks, if I've said it once, I've already said it 1,000 times. The state of Minnesota, we're not going to be able to grow our economy without having a fully implemented transportation system. That means everything has to work. That means our ports have to work. That means our airports have to work. That means that our roads and bridges have to be of the highest quality. And, yes, that means that our transit services that we provide for the public have to work. We have to get rid of the congestion. Families are losing hundreds and hundreds of dollars in their budgets every year, and it's estimated at north of $800 every year that families are losing in the metropolitan area because they're sitting in traffic. Now, Senator Larson, your constituents aren't happy about that at all. And I know the constituents that I have that live in the northern portion of my district that choose to be employed in the metropolitan area and have to make the drive don't like it. They absolutely don't like sitting in traffic. They don't like driving on roads that have a drivability rating someplace south of the South Pole. And they want improvements. And this bill is going to provide those improvements. Senator Jungbauer has been working with a lot of the members of the committee and myself included, and has always stated that he's not opposed to increasing taxes if we can tie it directly to work being done. This bill ties that work being done, ties the money to the work being done. We're going to build transit systems. We're going to build better roads. We're going to build better bridges. We're going to make sure that our ports are able to move commodities in and out in an expedited manner. We're going to make sure that rail service works, and we're going to make sure that that the folks over at the Metropolitan Airports Commission, who sometimes we argue with, but they do run a world-class operation, and we're going to make sure that that continues along with our airports in greater Minnesota. This bill does that. It provides the money, and it provides the impetus to get it done, and that's what we're about. This committee is about building stuff, and this bill is going to build it.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Day.
Really quick comment. First off, Senator Dibble and Senator Murphy, thanks for, you know, all the work you've really done in this bill. And I'm glad you're doing it early, because I'm sure you're aware with elected Met Council and 10-cent gas tax and tabs going up and everything, when it hits the governor's desk, it's probably going to be there for about, maybe 15 seconds before it gets vetoed. So
that
hopefully
long?
We'll all be back here to, to redo it and kind of go back through the system. But mm-hmm. So be it, you know.
Well,
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Day, no, I actually appreciate the comment. And I think that that's one of the biggest reasons why we're starting early. I think that we've done a good job starting about 5 years ago of trying to educate the legislature as to what the need is. And the need has kept growing. And our funding level hasn't kept up with it, and I think that you would agree to that. Yes, we are... definitely bringing forth even a more aggressive bill than Senator Arata and I did 3 or 4 years ago. I believe that the time is ripe to do that. I do believe that people want our economy to move forward, and our economy is not going to move forward unless we have transportation services that are of the 21st century instead of, late 19th century. You do point out the foot traps that are in the bill. And we'll continue to discuss those and hopefully try to bring more members into the fold, either by using amendments to jettison parts of the bill that may be problematic or to help improve parts of the bill that are currently in there. But, Senator Day, we all know that if we're going to raise the gas tax, we're all going to get blamed for it, whether it's 2 cents or 10 cents or 20. And I do believe that we've heard enough testimony that if we relied strictly on the gas tax to fix our roads, that we would be talking about an 18 to 24 cent a gallon gas tax increase to fix our roads. We're not doing that here. We're asking for 10, and we're allowing some other options to be brought to the table so that we use a good mix of funding options. And at the end of the day, I would hope that we could gain more support. This bill, as it sits, has support in our caucus, and there's a few members in the Republican caucus that would like to see it move forward. And I think the more that we work on this together, I believe that the better the product is going to be, and at the end of the day, more members are going to they're going to gravitate towards it, both Democrats and Republicans.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Day.
I think one of the things is, I think as Senator Bonhoff said, the elected Met Council really, that's kind of a, that's one thing that we threw in here that, kind of ignites us all. But all I would, thanks for bringing the bill forward, and we're all here. And mm-hmm. It's kind of like a, this is like a steroids bill. It's kind of like making Barry Bonds a pharmacist. this is pretty heavy. I think with gas prices at $2.50, $2.60, mm-hmm. I think a 10-cent gas tax is going to be pretty tough for people around the state of Minnesota. And I know we listen to a lot of people and a lot of things, but right. I appreciate, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate you bringing it forward, and we're having a dialogue, and we'll surely have fun.
Yeah. And
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Day, gas prices are starting to creep back up there somewhat. I did ask a person who works in that industry to bring me a chart in relation to gas prices over the past few months to see how they fluctuated. And I believe that it's sitting up there next to Senator Carlson. But and there's copies of that in your folder, I do believe.
It's in your packet, Senator Day.
Yeah. But if you look at that, there's a swing almost every week of about 8 cents. And, if we're going to make that kind of profit for Mobil and Exxon and those kind of people, and they are making profit. They're making billions of dollars. All I'm saying is that, we ought to get a little skinny piece of that so that we can provide transportation services, like down on Highway 14 where the fatality rate is, it's one of the higher roads in the state. And, those things need to be fixed up. And if we're going to let the price of gas fluctuate on the open market by 5 to 8 cents every week, if we put an extra nickel or dime or 15 cents on it, I really don't think that the general public is going to, they're going to be mad that we raise taxes, like I said earlier, whether it's 2 cents or 20. But I really don't believe that the overall impact is going to be that great for families. And I'll also bring a chart where I ran some rough numbers to show what it means. For you, you drive a lot, Senator Day, and it's going to mean more for you. Same thing for me. But for the average family that drives, 20, 25,000 miles a year, and that's kind of high a little bit. But, just run the numbers and figure it out what that means a month. And that means that you're not going to stop at Starbucks or Caribou and get that that latte, twice a week. You're only going to get it three times a week instead of five times. You know, so if we look at it like that, and people look at it logically, and like Senator Jungbauer says, if people can see results, then they're not going to be so hesitant at the pump to pay the tax. I mean, that's just, I think we can all agree to that. But Senator Dibble has done a fine job in putting, and his subcommittee have done a fine job in putting a lot of these transit pieces together that make the bill mesh a lot better than what we've had in previous years. But I can tell you, Senator Day, that the staff around the room, especially Ms. Boyd, Ms. Berzowski, you know, we were in here on Sunday, and you know, I was one of the fortunate ones that got to leave at 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening, and they are still here. And that's the kind of dedication that we have from our staff. And, it, you know, we can just say thanks to the people at the front row and the folks sitting in the back there, too, because they're the ones that actually do all the work. We're like the quarterback of the football team.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, thank the staff and Senator Murphy and Senator Dibble. And one of the things that has me support this bill are what happened when we went to those transit hearings all over the state. And it wasn't just people who were in one party. These were citizens, you know, in the one that was in Minnetonka, I think it was a huge snowstorm. There's maybe 100 people there, the mayor of Edina. There's actually a city council member from Senator Ortman's district who talked about the need. And all these people were unanimously saying, do something. The League of Cities was there. The chamber was there. Now, there might be pieces of this that this group or that group supports or doesn't support, but we have found in every transit hearing that, you know, I've been shocked by the amount of support where people come and say how important this is to them. And so while, you know, no elected person ever wants to raise a tax for fear of they won't be back next time, I do really believe that the public wants us to do something.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, and Senator Dibble. I also think you deserve a lot of credit for putting together a really aggressive bill, and I think that's great credit. I have a question as it relates to the sales tax. One of the things that I've, over the years, never really understood is why we do a metro-only sales tax. And I just want to get your thoughts about this. It's perhaps just a difference of perspective, but I introduced a bill for, you know, to have a statewide sales tax, and I'm just curious about your thoughts as we're moving forward. Why a metro only sales tax?
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Larson, I think that there's probably a couple different reasons. I can tell you what my thoughts are behind that. You know, the vast majority of transit services that are going to be provided, and you can see that in the breakdown of where the monies go under the lease vehicle tax and under the invest money, the vast majority of those services are going to be in the metropolitan area. And here's how I feel about it. The folks that live in my district, they're going to come up and they're going to use like the Hiawatha to go, you know, they're going to park out at Fort Snelling or go to the Mall of America and then ride the train over and watch a Viking football game or whatever. So they're going to use it periodically through the year. They also come to the metropolitan area and they spend their money. And so I do believe that, you know, say if you live in Wabasha and you travel to the metropolitan area 5 times a year and you use the transit services 5 times, I believe that you've paid for them. Not only by, you know, buying $100 worth of stuff at the Mall of America that has the sales tax applied to it, but also, you know, for the $2 that you got to throw in the kitty to ride the train. So I feel that our residents in greater Minnesota, you know, they're going to pay their appropriate share. And the sales tax from the metropolitan area is going to definitely foot the majority of the bill. And I believe that that's where the majority of the folks are that are going to use it. You know, 98+% of the people are going to be that are using the transit systems are going to be from the metropolitan area. Very few of them are going to be from my district. Probably more of them are going to be from Senator Ortman's district or, you know, up those commuter rail lines that we're going to build. And in the future, you know, we may have to come back and revisit this. You know, there's also the, I believe it's a constitutional issue about imposing a sales tax on a local jurisdiction that's under a million. Is that?
Without local approval, yes.
We're without local approval. And so what we're doing in the metropolitan areas, we are imposing the tax, you know, because it's already a taxing district. It obviously has more than a million people. But I think if you look at the numbers and how we've broken it out on the, you know, the like I said, the lease vehicle tax and then the InBest tax, I think they're appropriate. We're giving the other counties the ability, you know, the ring counties, the ability to opt in if they so choose. And if they opt in, then they're also opting in for the sales tax portion. And I do believe that in the next 10 years, you're going to see more of these ring counties, these collar counties, opt in because they are going to be the benefactors because, you know, the Hiawatha line proved it. And every light rail, I should say every rail project that has been instituted in the United States has had a ridership clearly two-thirds above what they estimated. Every one. I mean, and the guy that sat here, Senator Obestar, a couple months ago said that. I mean, every one of these light rail initiatives that have happened has had such an explosion of ridership. And we're going to see that once the North Star is built out past St. Cloud, and it should go out past St. Cloud. Red Rock, once it goes through Hastings and down to Red Wing, you're going to see that. And hopefully some of those counties are going to barter into the system and get on board. But, you know, right now there's there are a little bit of resistance for counties elsewhere. You know, we did structure that sales tax so it was transit only. You know, if we ever wanted to revisit the issue and say that we could, I'm sorry, not transit only, it's going to be split in the metropolitan area just because the need is so great. But, you know, if we were going to do that statewide, I think that we would not only bump up against some of the constitutional issues, but you know, then there becomes that issue of the appropriate split because Kitson County is not like Hennepin County. So, a long explanation for kind of a. I think the short answer is that a lot of the folks say in Sherburne County probably don't feel that they should be paying for the transit options in the metropolitan area. But, you know, but I mean, if you look at it fairly, and, you know, it's like my kids, you know, we'll hop in the truck sometimes and we'll go, and we'll do that. We'll go over to Fort Snelling and park the truck and get on the train and go down and watch the baseball game. The last one we saw was when Torrey Hunter hit a home run to beat the White Sox. Yeah, the only good thing to come out of Wrigley Field is Wrigley Field, and that's only when they don't win. You know, so we paid the appropriate, you know, what I feel is appropriate. I mean, you know, we bought, you know, tickets. You know, just a trip to the ball game is you're going to drop $100, period. You know, and then the cost of the train and, you know, just – fiddling around. We did save on parking, but, you know, I feel that's appropriate.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, and I'm not suggesting that
Senator Larson,
that we have a statewide sales tax to pay necessarily for transit in the metro area. It's just I know that there are transit needs in greater Minnesota as well. We've had that conversation. We have the conversation about how we get to their needs so that we meet their needs as well, and I'm sensitive to that. And it just occurs to me, as we build out to St. Cloud or as we build to Red Wing or beyond, as we look at I know there's discussion about other rail lines to the northeast, that there may be opportunities for communities beyond just the seven counties in the next tier for them to have dollars available for further investment in their areas, not to be funneling those dollars to the metropolitan area. I think it's fair to say that there's concern among some in the metro that what ends up happening over time is metro, residents may end up paying twice as it relates to infrastructure, because now we have two systems. We pay on the gas tax and with our tab fees, and then we also pay in the metro sales tax. And I think making sure that clearly that the metro sales tax is viewed as sort of a mega investment in the metropolitan area by metropolitan residents is important, and that the safeguards are in there for that, because there certainly is that impression. And I'm not saying it for the purposes of criticizing the bill at all. I just have always preferred that we look at it in a statewide manner. I support your bill and will vote for it, even though it has some differences in how I would prefer it be. But that's the way the legislative process is, and I understand that, and you do as well. So. But I know there are a few other things that I just, have a few questions about as we go through the process as it relates to some of the elected Met Council language. While I support that, some of that concerns me in the bill. And also the waiting issue that Senator Rest raised earlier. I think there are some details there that we have to figure out so that all communities feel fairly represented on that Joint Powers Board. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Senator Larson's point, I completely agree with you, Senator Larson. I had early on voiced strong support for a statewide and then thought it could be less than the half cent and could even be, it's one for the metro, a little less outstate because their needs are less. And I think, unfortunately, from a pragmatic point of view, while we keep talking about we are one state, and that's said to me many times, that it's one Minnesota, that in fact, in a way, when it comes down to doing these sorts of programs, that we might not be able to build that consensus across the state, and so perhaps we have to start here, and then maybe those outstate areas will have a greater demand for transit once they see, and we'll be able to move towards that. But I too wish we were starting there.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sensitive to the time, and I think we'll have more time to talk about the bill and the particularities of the bill as well as the overall. Let me first say I want to echo the thanks to staff, both Senator Murphy's staff and our Senate Council and Fiscal staff, as well as my staff. Ben Rouse was in all weekend, and folks should also know that Senator Murphy, though he may have been getting married and going to his son's graduation last week, he was beaming in quite a bit. We were on the phone with him quite a bit. So he worked pretty hard last week, even though he wasn't physically present. So I appreciate that as well. I think Senator Bonoff probably articulated what I was going to articulate. I agree with you completely as a matter of principle, Senator Larson. But the truth is, the legislative process works as it does. And, we've taken a run at that over the years. And we're also, frankly, looking at, what's worked in other metropolitan areas, and they raise their own sales tax in their own area for transit purposes, full half-cent sales tax in most cases, up to 1 cent in a lot of cases for transit in those metropolitan areas. And I just want to say, this bill does raise, some taxes, and that's clear. But I think people also understand that our failure to do some spending on transportation doesn't mean we don't. If we don't do that, doesn't mean we're not going to be spending a lot of money collectively and individually and as businesses, on congestion, the family that has to own and operate another car, the opportunities that's lost to this metropolitan area and the state economically if we're not an attractive place to be for businesses to locate or a place where people want to come and live. Pollution is a cost that we have to take into consideration. We certainly factor that in when we make our energy calculations. When we're developing in a way that's more spread out, we're spending a lot more money privately and publicly as well, and we lose out on federal funds, opportunity to match and take advantage of federal funds. We ship about, we only get back about 70 cents for every dollar we ship out to the federal government, and this is a way of maybe writing that equation just a little bit. And if we do a whole bunch of bonding without paying for the interest, we're diminishing our ability to operate a system. We're paying more effectively that way and taking from future generations. So while we're paying more money quite explicitly in this bill, failure to pass a bill like this doesn't mean we're not out a bunch of money anyways.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. And I wanted to add my thanks to you and to Senator Murphy and to the staff here for doing such an excellent job in putting this together. This is what my constituents asked us to do. They did ask me, bring some rails across the river, study it more, invest. Everywhere I go, the people are saying invest more. And even some of the other bills that I've been involved in, they tend to have some investment in transportation that, for instance, a major project that we have going on that's heard in other committees is the Thompson West expansion, and it's contingent on doing some road improvements, and these are road improvements on state highways right next to it, and they were road improvements that just hadn't been done for quite some time. And I think another thing that I wanted to mention, besides the chart that you put together, Senator Murphy, I have this chart that I have not copied for anyone, but it's a chart that shows the average price of a cost of gasoline from 1950 to these days right now, and what the Minnesota sales tax or the Minnesota gas tax was in those years. And every year up until about 1980, we had 19, 17, 20% of your fuel price was Minnesota tax. Then in 1980, our gasoline from 1975 to 1980, it went from 53 cents to $1.13, and we dropped down to 10% of our fuel bills were Minnesota tax. But we bumped the tax from 11 cents a gallon to 16 in reaction. We went back up to 13, 18, 18, 12, until 1988 when we stopped raising the taxes again. We stopped raising the funding for fuels. And we started to drop down 18 in 95, 12% in 2000, 10% in 2005, and now in 2007, and I have it at $2.30, which I know is not correct right now, that's 9% of our fuel cost. We once had $3.10 gasoline here, and we had 20 cents of Minnesota tax on it. That's 6% of the cost of our fuel was Minnesota fuel taxes. If we would have stuck with 20% over all those years, we would actually have paid 62 cents on a $3.10 gallon of gas. So what we're doing is we're not investing in a proportion that we really ought to. When, of course, all of our vehicles now are getting higher mileage, they're lasting longer, but our roads have gotten cheaper, maybe not, but we need to put money into our roads. The businesses that are out in Eagan are asking me to invest in roads, invest in bridges. They can't get into town without crossing a bridge. So I'm really happy that you're doing this, and thank you very much. And with that, I believe we will lay this over for further consideration. I should ask, is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak to this project?
Well, with Mr. Chairman, I think the appropriate question would be how many people would like to support this? Raise your hand. Okay, good. All right. That was not on the camera.
I saw that.
That was very good.
You want, Mr. Chairman, you want to try that one again?
Should we do that
I
again?
Got the one hand up that I wanted.
She did.
With that, there's no further business for today, and we will stand adjourned.
Thank you.
Putting a bill together.